I'm Susan Montanaro, and you're listening to Dreams and Detours, a show about the life we plan to have versus the one we're living, for better or not. Everybody has a story, and I believe we find ourselves in each other's stories. Hi, it's Susan Montanaro. This week's episode of Dreams and Detours contains sensitive content about sexual abuse and violation. I sat down with Nubia Duval Wilson, author, journalist, and advocate for survivors of child sexual abuse. Her mission is to liberate survivors by curating content that supports their well-being and gives them a voice and community to embrace the reality of living and loving after assault. Our conversation might be a trigger for some and a source of understanding for others. We've included information and resources for everyone. Please welcome Nubia Duval Wilson.
Welcome to the show, Nubia. It's so good to have you today.
Thank you for having me, Susan.
Yeah. So, you know, I just want to let the audience know we met recently through a mutual colleague and friend, and I was so excited to learn more about you. And I think initially it was this wonderful connection to our marketing, PR, and media backgrounds, but boy, how quickly we were able to make a different kind of connection just based on storytelling, different parts of life that we've both been through, challenges. And so I'm so happy to have you here today. I love on your website, when you first launch it, it says a survivor igniting social impact through storytelling. So brilliant.
Thank you.
Yeah. And also just to note that, you know, you're the author of their Survivors Club, which is another component of the brilliant work that you do. And so today, I really wanted to talk more about that work, those parts of your life, and what all of that means, where it comes from, and what's going on there, and share your story.
Well, thank you. One of the reasons why I wrote this novella called The Survivors Club was to have a platform to talk about the topic that we're going to talk about today, which is survivorship, surviving sexual abuse. And the title writer has always been associated with my name in some way, whether it was through my full-time job or through my side hustle, passion, hobby. Back in 2016, I had just started my business, Cielo Consulting, which is a PR and marketing agency. And just when, you know, everything seemed to be so perfect, I could leave my kids alone, you know, for an extended amount of time to let them play. They're 15 months apart. So Ella was 3, Luke was 2, and my business was really getting going. I was getting more clients. So everything just seemed so perfect, you know?
Right.
And all of a sudden, I started to have flashbacks of my abuse as a child. And, you know, people always ask, well, I don't understand. How come you weren't remembering it before? And I go, well, the truth is I would at times when I would still unfortunately talk to the abuser, I would say to myself, oh, you know what? We had like a weird relationship. And then I would just push those thoughts down. You know, I wouldn't allow myself to think about it.
When you say a weird relationship, do you mean that you recall the details of the weirdness of the relationship, or you just sort of had in your brain consciously summed it up as being weird?
I had summed it up as being weird or inappropriate or odd. Okay. I had never allowed myself to go down that road of really analyzing it and realizing how wrong it was.
Sure.
And that it was abusive. The weird thing is that person was still in my life as a relative. So it just was complicated. And it was an older person that I respected in many ways. So, you know, and that is one of the tough components when you are experiencing that type of abuse and it's family related or someone or a close friend to the family.
Sure.
So all that to say, my children were triggering those memories, and I realized I had to face them. I had always been in therapy off and on for anxiety. I started the therapy after my daughter was born before going back to work. Because I figured it was going to be tough for me. And I was really realizing I have anxiety, like really bad. I don't know why. So a part of me knew like there's things you need to uncover.
Right.
And so I've always been a writer, as I said. So during the process of facing, you know, the skeletons in my closet, so to speak, and facing my childhood trauma, I started to go back and look at some of the things that I wrote, my poetry, short stories, and I came across this short story that I realized subconsciously I was telling myself something by writing this story, and I didn't realize it. And that's what became the Survivors Club. A year into going to therapy and finding this story, I said to my therapist, I was like, you know, I'm not ready to expand on this now. I found it about maybe 2 or 3 months into starting to go back to therapy to talk about the abuse. And I said, you know, I can't do this now, but I know like a year from now, I want to put out the short story. I want to expand on it. And I want to use it as a vehicle to talk about abuse, but not in the way of being graphic about saying what happened to me, because that's not what I want to focus on. I want to focus on what happens next after, and when you're starting to face it, what does PTSD look like as a parent, as a leader, as a mom? What does anxiety look like, and how do we function? And those are the topics that at the time, I think we're seeing them more now. So, I mean, like I said, this was 2016. Those topics weren't talked about as much a couple years ago. What we were hearing was Me Too.
Right. No, you're
great.
Right.
Like, yes, it's a great thing.
Well, it was easy, it felt almost, to use those words because it's you're putting your hand up. You're making this acknowledgement, but you're not exactly putting it out there to say what, how, when, why, you know, and that can be there. While there's comfort in one vein, there's it's distorted and it feels confusing in the other way. And so you're right. It doesn't really flesh out what's happened or what's transpired and how you make sense of that then. How do you use that moving forward?
Exactly. What do you do next? And you will often you still feel really isolated and lost. So the Survivors Club is a novella about that. It's about five strangers. It's a supernatural thriller, so it could never really happen in real life. I like to kind of create my own worlds when I write. So it's about five strangers who just wake up and they're in a room. They're in a 1920s smoking lounge. They're stuck. They don't know how they got there. And they're mysteriously, you know, from an unseen force, they're mysteriously taken out of the room to take over the life of a teenager, a boy named Quentin, and they're all experiencing his life and helping him to prevent him from suicide, really. But while you're reading it, you're not quite sure what's going on, and you're trying to piece together the puzzle, like what connects all these people? Why are they doing this? So I enjoyed writing it. You know, the creative outlet really helped me heal. And I had a professional, Sherry Botwin, who's been a trauma expert who's been involved in a lot of high profile cases. She spoke a lot about the Bill Cosby case out of Philadelphia that ultimately put him in jail. She did the epilogue of the book, which was great because I wanted to have an expert voice.
Sure.
And then I wrote an epilogue as well about why I wrote it in my story and the importance for community, not just parents, but also community and people in general to understand how prevalent child sexual abuse is. One in 10 children will be sexually abused by the time they're 18, which in the US, that's like an astounding number.
Outrageous. Yeah.
It's outrageous. And when I'm in a big group and I say that statistic, more often than not, someone comes up to me afterwards and says, I'm a survivor too. And I've never told anyone. Thank you for speaking out.
Right.
So, you know, as I said, so the storytelling has kind of grown from there. I put the book out. I always saw that story as a TV show. So I don't know how to have small goals.
Why bother?
You know, add something else to my list. So I quickly found a co-creator through Cielo Consulting, actually, because I have so many amazing clients. An actress client of mine put me in touch with Naomi Pandolfi, who's an amazing screenplay writer, and we co-created this TV pilot that we had been pitching for a couple of months around last summer of 2019. Took a pause to make some edits and changes to some of our collateral based on advice from a contact we had at Viacom, which was just like amazing to have this guy in our corner. And then COVID happened.
Sure.
So for the sake of being respectful and knowing that there's a lot of chaos right now, we've held back on doing any more pitching. But I do hope, you know, maybe near the end of the year to pick that back up. And I'm also working on a movie idea now. I'm taking a screenwriting class for film.
Wonderful. So you know what I think the most brilliant part of, well, the activity that you were engaged in, looking to shop around a potential, you know, series and to be picked up on the project itself, then being placed on pause due to the COVID dynamic that we're currently like in the middle of right now, is that there's also, as you've noted and we've shared, and you wrote a statement to me, the rise of women and men coming forward with stories of survival and how the statistics in America of an assault every 92 seconds, and how right now, more than ever, that is an issue, a problem. You know, domestic violence also massive issue right now, with people being held tightly in close quarters together in ways in which we don't normally experience. And so I don't doubt for one minute that there's a place sooner than later for stories like yours and for your project ideas to have their place. Out of this dynamic will come so many things, so much artistic creation, so much music, so much of great things, but the truth will also come out, and those stories will be out there for to be told, to be shared, and like I'm doing here, to find ourselves. We find ourselves in other people's stories. We affirm our experiences through hearing and seeing others have similar experience, and we learn how to put language to it. And that, like your book, is a tool for survival.
Exactly. Yeah. My goal is to create a community of people who are survivors that want to come together to learn from one another, to share tips, and then the community of people who might not be survivors, but who care and want to understand, how do I support a survivor? How do I talk to a survivor? More often than not, one of us knows one. So what do we do for them? And that's important, because we feel very isolated. And speaking of COVID, now everyone knows what it's like to feel isolated now. And a lot of my friends have asked me, well, how are you doing? And in many ways it's re-triggered me. But the ironic thing is, I felt isolated and alone for 3 years.
Right.
And it was emotional and mental isolation, right? Not so much physical.
Right.
And so I learned coping mechanisms from those challenges. And so when I realized I was being triggered, not so much because I was being abused — I'm very lucky to be in a really great, healthy relationship — but because the lack of control is triggering.
Of course.
Yeah.
And that's really a torturous feeling emotionally, you know, because, you know, talk about trying to walk yourself out of that kind of a corner. I mean, it just takes way more than what most people can probably understand or might have experienced. Yeah, and the way that you mentioned that most people know a survivor, in my own family, you know, my extended family, sure, we've had to deal with that. You know what's so interesting? When I was I must have been in like junior high or the beginning of high school. I think it was younger. I think I was in junior high. I remember writing a book report on child sexual abuse. I was not the victim of that.
Wow.
Okay. I didn't know anyone at that age that had ever had that experience. So it wasn't like I had heard someone I knew, but I remember hearing about it on the news. And I remember reading about it in the paper at that particular time in the 80s. And I remember feeling so paralyzed that that could happen to someone like my age. And it freaked me out, but it also, I can't even articulate what my experience was, because I didn't have language at that age, but I knew I needed to talk about it. And I didn't even know why, because again, it wasn't my story or anyone's story that I personally knew. But yeah.
That's so interesting.
Yeah. Well, it always sits with me in this weird way still. I'm like, why did you feel the need? But I did. I felt the need to talk about it.
It might be because a part of you realized, this could happen to me.
Sure.
right?
Sure.
And what does that mean? And how do you internalize that? A lot of people will ask, like, well, what, you know, if I think I have a friend that might have been assaulted, or, you know, what do I do for them? What do I say to them? And so I often give tips. I say, one, make them feel safe. You know, you can say to them, hey, you know what, you seem to be a little out of it today, or you seem to be down lately. You know, I'm here for you. You know, you can trust me if there's something you want to talk about. Let them tell you if it is something that they do want to talk about. If you already know that person is a survivor because they've confided in you, continuing to create that safe space for them is so important, because they don't want the shame. They're worried that they're going to be judged. I was worried about that when I started to tell people, my neighbors, my friends, my colleagues. I was worried that I would be seen as weak or just not fit to be.
Or damaged.
Or damaged.
Right. That comes up. Yeah.
Or like, is something wrong with you? Or can I leave my children with you? And, right. You know, like, it's actually quite the opposite. Like, you want to leave your kids with me because I'm on it. I'm watching for all the crazy people.
That's right. You're hypervigilant. Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
So hypervigilant. Yeah. Yeah. And so that feeling of not being judged is really important to us. Also being seen. It's something that I talk a lot about with my therapist, and there's some challenges there with my parents about it, just with the way I was raised, and not being seen, not feeling like you're appreciated or acknowledged, feeling like you aren't appreciated unless you do something, right? Because right. The role that you played was, well, I had to do something to feel like I was being, you know, the reciprocation of receiving the love because I did something.
Right. As if you participated or it was your fault. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. So it's interesting when you start to put those pieces together, as I learn more about my own challenges. I blog about them on NubiaDeval.com, and I blog on a couple of other sites. And a really popular blog post recently was what your partner needs to know. What sexual abuse survivors wish their partners knew. And so the tips are actually written as if I'm talking to, I'm in a heterosexual relationship, so I will say to your husband or boyfriend. So the tips are like talking to the boyfriend or the husband, but the way it's written is, okay, ladies, we know that your husband is actually not going to read this. So read this with him.
Right.
That one was really great, because it's hard to have that conversation sometimes with your partner. Like, hey, you know what? I don't really want to be kissed today, but I want to feel like I'm loved and appreciated.
Sure.
And it's complicated, you know?
Sure. No, there are more ways for you to feel love and feel safe. And this immediately makes me think love languages. You know, I imagine you have your own set, and then maybe they shift, a couple of your top ones might shift placement now and again, depending on what your needs are. But they're, the love languages are what they are for a reason, because it's the way in which we feel safe, feel loved, and can accept it as real.
It's funny that you say that, because I did talk about that recently in a Instagram video. I said, I bet you my love languages have changed. The first time we took the test was 2011. And we kept track of our answers, because, you know, we're type A like that. And 2019, I think the end of 2019, yeah, like around December, I said, Chris, let's take the test again. I bet you they're different. And they were. And words of affirmation was my number one. Acts of service was number two. In 2000 and whatever, 11, before I started to, you know, remember, touch was my number one love language.
Isn't that fascinating, though?
It's crazy. And touch was like number five. I was like, sure. I don't want to be touched right now.
Yeah, no, but it makes complete sense. And like, it's kind of brilliant, actually, that you have the luxury of saying before and after in ranking those parts of, you know, what are meaningful to you and how you receive love, because I imagine most people might not be able to have the time, right, lined up quite the same or quite like that. But yes, it's fascinating. And that, even your ability to share that part, has to be meaningful and helpful to others if they were wondering, wow, I wonder what would have been for me or if this would have been different. And chances are, yes, it might have been different and likely would have been different. And that's okay. Because I think it's more about what you feel safe with now and what's more meaningful to you now, you know, more than ever.
Right. Especially after becoming a mom, it's going to shift.
Yeah, no, I imagine that, you know, it makes perfect sense. The timing of your history coming up and bubbling to the surface for you and becoming more of a conscious thought and recall. It makes a lot of sense. I mean, I'm not a mom, but I would imagine that would be the exact time if I hadn't already had the recall. Yeah.
Yeah.
Through that history. So talk to me a little bit about the, you know, you liberate survivors, essentially. You liberated yourself through this process beautifully, if I might add, just because, you know, not everyone I imagine has that kind of a healing or a process. And so now your work, and I imagine this also comes into play for your healing itself, is to help and liberate others. And so talk to me a little bit about what that looks like and who's there, not who's there from an identity perspective, but like who comes into your space that you can work with. And
sure. Yeah. It's all about empowerment for me, empowering others to, even if they don't feel comfortable talking about their abuse, whether it's to friends, family, or vocally on social media, just allowing themselves to think about it, to talk about it to themselves. So I try once a week to do an Instagram video chat where I talk about things that I've learned, challenges that I'm having, and then I challenge the listeners, like, how are you dealing with this? What's coming up for you? Think about that. You know, I'll say things like, you know, I was down this week, you know, just being honest about it. I'm having a tough time. I'm having a tough time being with my kids right now on lockdown. There was a time when just being around my kids in general was triggering for me. So now I'm like with them, you know, 24/7. And how does that look like for all of you? I use a lot of humor too, because I mean, I've always tried to use humor to heal. Even more so now, like one day I was in an Instagram video and I was in my bathroom hiding. It's just that I'm hiding today, you know, and it's okay to do that. I like to get dressed up. I wear a lot of wigs, which people, when they first meet me, they're like, really, you're into wigs? And I go, yeah, why not? It's fun to dress up and pretend to be someone else for a little bit.
Sure.
I created a Facebook page called the Survivors Club, and it's not really a page, it's a group. It's a secret private group. You can't find it. You can't search for it. The only way to get into it is if you go to my website and inquire about it. Or if you know someone who's already in the group and they invite you in. But there's a decent little group of us right now. And we use that group to say what we want to say and know that no one is going to shame us.
Right.
Most of the women, and we have one male in the group as well who has had his own experiences with abuse. So he's very female friendly, I'll say in quotes.
Okay.
But I mean, because men are abused as well.
Absolutely.
You know, it's hard for them to talk about it because of the whole machismo, you know, thing. But so it's a safe space for everyone. And most of the people in that group are survivors of abuse, but there are also people who have not been abused, but who could be like they're bipolar or they're depressed and they might still be pushing down certain
repressing the memory itself.
Thank you. Yes. It could still be repressing. It doesn't have to be abuse. It could be anything. You know, they're still kind of trying to figure out why am I like this, but the group is great and we share tips and we vent sometimes, you know, sometimes we're just like, I just need to vent and complain.
Yeah, no, but it's good to have a group of people, safe space, and rallying together to give each other the space and the forum and the mic, if you will, to let it out, but also to ensure that everyone has what they need and to not give up on themselves if they're having that kind of a day where things are just not lining up and they feel completely, you know, shattered again or just not quite themselves and strong enough to move on. And so, you know, it's a place to be lifted, I imagine.
place to be lifted and reaffirmed.
Yeah.
Because as much as it's great that there is more of a platform now to be open about your mental health challenges and it's becoming a social norm, you're still opening yourself up for, you know, the, well, are you sure? Or, you know, I don't know, why do you feel that way? And people can be empowered to support you as much as kind of break down what you're trying to share. And anytime someone is opening themselves up and then someone goes, well, you know, I don't know if I quite buy that, or, oh, that seems weird that you would think that way, all of a sudden you just shut back up because you're like, well, now people feel like they don't believe me, or
I'm alone and no one has had this angle or experience or feeling about it. Yeah, that would be not ideal. Not ideal at all,
which is why I think it's still hard for most people to just talk about it so freely, because they're worried that someone's going to shut them down. Right. And so you know, I've had people on Instagram direct message me and say, hey, like people that I don't know, you know, say, hey, thank you for talking about this. People are listening and it's helping them. Even if they're not commenting, you know, to show that they're part of this group, you know, I say the survivors in the shadows. But hearing someone just talking about it and sharing how they're getting through it is helpful. So that's what's empowered me to keep doing it.
Sure.
You know, sometimes I do go like, oh my gosh, am I too outrageous? You know, is one of my clients going to see one of my videos of me hiding in my bathroom with a wig on and go, what is Nubia doing? But what's great is that my clients have become my friends, and any new client, they'll become my friend too. And it has opened up the doors for them to talk about their mental health.
Sure.
And that's been great. We bond on, and like I said, anyone can have, I mean, everybody right now is having some mental health issues
when sure.
you're on lockdown. So it just invites them to have an open conversation and know they're not being judged, which has been great.
It doesn't have to be a mirrored experience. It doesn't have to be that you've had the same pathways to where we are now. It simply has to say, I am here. I'm real. I too am vulnerable. I too have had, you know, injustices and violations, or just I've been steeped in confusion and that level of mental health and possibly even illness has impacted my life. And I too am looking to be a survivor of all of that and to prevail despite those hiccups, those moments, and those, you know, darker days and times when I may not feel as strong. And I bet you give a lot of encouragement and strength to people, like you just said, not even knowing how wide and far your message might go, but clearly is. And I think that must be really super on the moments when you kind of can get a small glimpse of what that might look like for others, you know, who are in the shadows. And so, you know, bravo to you. And thank God, quite honestly, that you're out there doing the work you're doing, because you understand what it feels like to be in the darker parts of this. And to maybe not see where there's someone to latch onto or to put some language and to balance, if you will, the emotional experience that you're having. And so by you being vocal and by you putting it out there, you are indeed encouraging others to see some, what I like to call the pinhole of light. Sometimes that's all we need, is a pinhole of light to say, yes, keep going up ahead. It's bigger and brighter. Don't stop. Right. And so
yeah.
I think that's brilliant. Really. So I thank you for doing all of that. another thing that you mentioned then that we kind of like, you know, exchanged is this idea of leaders, you know, being able to get back into their leadership roles and to actually lead. Now knowing that, you know, there's trauma attached to people, or that they themselves must be mindful of trauma attached to, let's say, the groups that they lead themselves. And so do you find that you're doing work, or that your work that you've already put out there is reaching now those who might need to know about it just in their own leadership capacity? Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, that's fair to say. Yes, it's part of my storytelling, one of the spokes in the wheel that I want to enhance on a bit more. I didn't even realize how much it impacted how I lead until a peer and friend of mine, Sahar Paz, brought it to the forefront for me. And she herself was a survivor and talks a lot about that. So she could see it. I couldn't see it. And sometimes it takes someone else to pull it out of you. Right. And I was like, oh yeah, I did do that. I never thought about that before. So it's something that I try to talk about more. I've talked about it more on platforms like this than I have on my own blog. But I plan to talk about it more on my blog and talk about it on Ciela Consulting's social platform. So one of the things that I realized from Sahar's brilliant observations is that survivors make really good leaders.
Fascinating.
Yeah, it's really fascinating. And I would say it doesn't just have to be survivors, but anyone who has experienced some type of trauma, it has this ability to lead and to grow followings. And I say that because I hate to bring up this show, but you know, the Tiger King. So it's a crazy show. And so the Tiger King, whatever his name is, Crazy Joe, experienced trauma, really almost died early on in his life. And I don't think he really dealt with it very well. And I was observing him and thinking to myself, this is why he's able to do what he does. So all that to say that we are, we're highly intuitive. Mm-hmm. It is our coping mechanism, especially if you were abused as a child, because you're constantly observing and navigating and figuring out, okay, this is what I'm going to have to do to survive and to maintain safety, protect myself, you know, manipulate situations here or there. And if you're, especially if it was happening in your house, right? So because you're highly intuitive, you can say to a colleague, hey, you seem down today. Do you want to chat? And they're going to look at you like, how do you even know that? I thought I was really doing a good job.
Can I just say something?
All together.
In my head right now, I'm screaming.
Yeah.
Because I grew up in a violent, abusive household, emotional and physical violence. And I know exactly what you're talking about. I had armor on as a child. I was extremely aware of others in an effort to protect myself. And that is now what I use, because, you know, I've worked through all that, thank goodness. But it's part of the skill set, very strong muscles there, very strong muscles. And it is part of what I use in my own counseling work and my own coaching work with clients, because I was able to pick that off in others. For years, I was the go-to person because I was constantly observing and seeing beyond the words of others. And I became the in-house, you know, coach.
Yes.
At work. And so now I'm on this pathway. So gosh, what you're saying is so 1000% true. It's, if anyone listening doesn't, that didn't make any sense, or if you didn't think of it that way, I trust me and trust Nubia, it's 1000% true.
I'm so happy you said that. Thank you. Yeah, it's crazy. And I'm sorry that you experienced that as a child, but you realize how to turn that coping mechanism. It's your superpower, right?
It is.
It became your superpower. and that's how we try to look at it and use it for good. And so I used to be the same. I would, at work, I was always the counselor and go to Nubia, she'll tell you what to do. And I'm like, why is this always happening? But I was always happy to do it. For me, it was always easier to help others than to look at what I needed for myself. I didn't want to, I don't need any assistance or help. Really, I just didn't want to go back and reflect and figure out what could be my challenges. But all that to say, that and managing chaos kind of goes hand in hand, right?
Yes.
So we're good problem solvers, and very calm about that as well. I used to have colleagues at my old agency in New York would go to the president and go, can I have Nubia as a manager? I want to work with her because she's so calm. And in PR, that is a big deal.
Massive asset for sure. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Normally at least once a day, you feel like your hair is on fire. so to problem solve calmly and keep a level head is important. And then, you know, just creating a really, safe work environment. My colleagues at Cielo, we bond. We've always worked remotely, right? We're a small business, so I have a co-working space in South Orange, and sometimes my colleagues in New York would do the reverse commute and come to New Jersey for fun, right?
That's funny.
But they always say how they always say how they love working with Cielo because we're so open with each other when we're having a bad day or when we need to go on one another's couch and talk about how we're feeling. We have it's an open invitation to do that and not be judged. And that's a really amazing thing, a gift that I've been able to give to my employees, that we give to each other.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think that this, you know, by putting it out there, you're almost helping other leaders look at the way in which they could offer some safer space or the ability for their teammates, their employees to come to work 100% who they are and not have to try and divert into this role that's only part of them and then suppress the other portions of who they are, what they bring, and what it means for them. And I think the more we dissect ourselves into different pieces and slivers, the less we can put all of what we are as a gift forward and be incredibly successful, productive, and sort of show up. And I think this is a theme that's been in conversation quite a bit lately. And the safer the space, the more understanding and the more accepted we feel, because life is, you know, kind of up and down and changes so easily, especially right now. I think that's exactly what people want. They want to be able to just be 100% of who they are and show up that way and be accepted. And that's what makes people just feel like normalized. And yes, they can breathe and they can be, and then they can perform. I mean, and anyone out there, any leader out there who doesn't want their teams and employees to perform at optimal level, I mean, I've never heard of anyone who wouldn't want that, who doesn't demand it, quite honestly. And I think that it's important for leaders to know, what does that take then? You know, what do I need to do? Who do I need to be for them?
Right. Yeah. I want to write a blog post for leaders who could be managing a survivor and not know it. Because yeah, there are definitely things that they can do now that I have been now that I can see it from both sides. There were things that some of my managers were surprised things would come out in my personality after I was hired. And they'd be like, she seemed like a really strong, confident person, but all of a sudden she's really quiet and closed off, and what's happening, you know? Sure. And now I can look back and analyze, well, now I understand why. I really want to try to think of like three or five tips on what you can do and how you can create that safe space. And it's just add that to the list. I think it's an important one for sure, because the truth is, as you said, every 92 seconds in America, someone is getting assaulted. 1 out of 10 have been abused by 18. The numbers now with COVID, you're going to see, unfortunately, more of that. And so when people are going back to work, especially if you're not seeing your employee every day and it's going to be a lot of remote, this, that, and the other, how can you create a safe space for them? I've been able to do it with my team remote for the past 5 years almost.
Right.
So something I've got to put together.
Well, I'm telling you what, I feel like this is part one. We have absolutely more to talk about and to explore. And I want to have you back to share that list and those tips. And as you develop them, I want to have that put out there for everyone to hear and to grab onto, because I think it's going to be really an essential guide to utilize.
Okay, so now I've got some more motivation. Thank you.
There you go. Just a little bit of pressure.
Right.
But I'm so glad we got to talk today, and I'm so glad we got to, again, put forth a topic and some content that we both know will resonate with many, and do it in a way that hopefully provides not just tips and some meaningful language, but also, you know, utilizing your book as a great tool for anyone that needs to and wants to either understand better or to utilize for their own experience. I think it's going to be brilliant. So thank you for being here today.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
Yeah. And just so that everyone can hear, because I'll put this in the show notes, of course, where can people find you, either social or website? Rattle that off.
Great, thank you. So my website is nubiaduval.com, and that's where I blog. And you can also learn about the private secret Facebook group, the Survivors Club, on there and enter to try to join it. I'm on Instagram at Encounters with Nubia. That's Encounters with Nubia on Instagram and Facebook, actually. And then for my business, like I said, I have started to do a little bit more content on there. It's at Cielo Consulting on Instagram and Facebook.
Perfect. Perfect. So just in case anyone is listening and they didn't get all of that, don't worry. It's going to be in the show notes, but I just wanted to put it out there so that people could find you and they could, again, latch on to the amazing content that you are putting out to the world. So thank you. That's it for this episode of Dreams and Detours. If you like the show, please rate, review, and subscribe and share it with your friends. You can find me at dreamsdetours.com and at dreamsdetours on Instagram. Thanks for listening.